Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Ladies and gentlemen, let it crackle!
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. So, as you probably could guess, that new kind of podcast interview thing I was talking about a couple weeks ago didn't happen. Things got mixed up, the timing was wrong, and we weren't able to record. However, I did manage to get that nice interview with Chris Sabat and Sean Schimmel about the new Dragon Ball Z film, and I want to thank Funimation and Jen Cruz of Rogers and Cowan for helping put all of that together. Hopefully you all got out there and supported the theatrical release of Resurrection F, so much so that it helped pave the way for future anime films from Funimation to be placed in theaters for much, much longer than a one-week limited engagement. But enough chit-chat, let's get today's show rolling. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start the show off with the debut single of Lady Baby, a group consisting of two Japanese girls, a pro wrestler in drag, and a dog. This may give Baby Metal a run for their money if they make it to the big time. This song is called
Nippon Manju!
Bambi, kuro kombini, dokomo anshin anzen nante.
僕らは心のシャッター切って様変わる景色に戸惑いながらも夢はほらいつもここにある覗いたワインダーその目に映ってる僕はあの頃の約束が今日へ遠くへと運んでゆく風を分けて走ろうカラフルレンズの先で輝く世界今すぐ君と見届けるのさ明日へのパノラマ両手広げて僕らを待ちわびてるそう鮮やかに光描いて繋いで桃を巻きのぼうその手で彩ってレッド、イエロー滲んだ涙の向こう夢の輪郭が重なり合うその瞬間を君とカラフルレンズが捉えた遥か未来まあ君と叶えてくのさ収まりきらないいくつもの奇跡を僕らは探し続けるそんなのでも心描いて繋いで溢れた雲の向こう見上げた空の青さを知るありがとう精一杯の愛込めてほらこの気持ち焼き付けようずっとカラフルレンズの先で輝く世界今すぐ君と見届けるのさ明日へのパノラマ両手広げて僕らを待ちわびてるさあフォーカスを合わせカラフルレンズが捉えた遥か未来まっすぐ君と叶えてくのさ収まりきらないいくつもの奇跡を僕らは探し続けるそう鮮やかに光描いて心つないで世界を描いて
Daisuke Ono with Colorful Lens from his new EP Doors. You can currently hear Daisuke Ono in Season 3 of Working, where he reprises his role of Jun Sato. And joining me now on No Borders the Race is one of the developers from Witchbeam, makers of Assault Android Cactus, which you can currently find on Steam Early Access and will be released soon on PS4, Wii U, and the Vita. Please welcome, all the way from lovely Brisbane, Australia, Sanatana Mishra. Welcome to No Borders the Race. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, actually.
Yes, so tell us a little bit about Witchbeam. Like, how did the three of you first meet and decide to create video games?
Well, actually, we worked together at a place called Sega Studios Australia. It used to be Creative Assembly Australia. It's an offshoot from the UK company that you might know from the Total War franchise and Alien Isolation.
Oh, yeah, I know those guys.
Yeah, a really, really interesting place. And we started there like maybe 6-7 years ago was when I first started there. And over the couple of years that I was there, I met Tim, who's the animator, programmer, everything on the project. He was joining Sega doing animation, and Jeff, who was doing music over there. Jeff's probably the most well-known out of the three of us, in case anybody does know him. He was the audio director on Alien Isolation, so he just won a bunch of awards for that.
Oh,
and then
nice.
Prior to that, he was the main musician on the Total War franchise, winning a BAFTA for his work on the music for that. So,
oh, wow.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we met each other there, and we really liked working with each other. Actually, what ended up happening was I was going to leave Sega about 2.5 years ago and start doing my own thing, and I talked with Tim, and we kind of decided that the two of us together could make something interesting on our own, something that was a little bit more focused than what we'd found at big studios, where as the number of people goes up, the risk assessment changes, and what you end up doing is oftentimes not what's really interesting to you. So we wanted to scale it down and do something a little bit more focused. We actually went to Jeff to ask him for advice on finding and hiring a composer, but he was so keen to work with us and work on the kind of ideas that we had that instead of helping us find a composer, he asked if he could join the team instead. And that's kind of how we formed a little three-man trio.
Glad it all worked out in the end. So where does the name Witchbeam originate from?
Witchbeam's actually Tim's name, actually, came up with that. So we have this policy that if somebody is really, really passionate about something, and in this case, Tim was quite passionate about the name Witchbeam, it's kind of an amalgamation of a lot of things that interest him. We kind of just run with it because Jeff and I, we had ideas for different names that might work or might not work. But if one person was really into something and the other three people were like, well, we can just go with whatever, then we try and let that person take the lead and do the thing that they're really excited about. And Witchbeam, came apart from Tim's love of all things witches, for starters. He's a big witch fan. And also his love of all things laser beams. And I guess also the kind of the history that goes into the Japanese games. There's a lot of connections to Toho stuff and things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Most definitely. So tell us a little bit about the story of Assault Android Cactus. Like, who is Cactus and what has led her to this broken down space freighter?
So Cactus is an android, for starters, in case you're wondering what the name of the game's all about. Assault Android Cactus, we're trying to encapsulate that it's a game that follows the titular character named Cactus, who is an android, and there's a lot of action in the game. So that's how we came up with that the name. We get that question a lot, so I thought I'd just bust in early.
Yeah.
And she shows up to this space freighter. So it's not a warship or anything like that. It's actually just a regular freighter that's meant to be hauling through space. It stopped responding to hails. It stopped responding to anything. So she's actually part of the Interplanetary Police, and she's out there to try and find out what's gone wrong. Find the ship, see if everything can be fixed up. She comes across it. Things kind of get a little bit crazy because she goes in close to it. She starts flying alongside of it, and then it activates its asteroid defense system and starts shooting at her. And in typical Cactus fashion, she's a little bit headstrong, a little bit... she's got a lot of belief in her own abilities. She's told by Control to, you know, abandon the mission and get away because she's going to get lasered. And she goes, well, no, I think I see an opening, and actually, like, breaks onto the ship. So she crash lands on the ship. And that's what you can see at the start of the tutorial there with the ship that is crashed into the wall next to where she is.
Oh, that's awesome. So what were some of the things that inspired the creation of Assault Android Cactus?
It goes back to the very beginning of the arcade roots is a lot of the inspirations. You know, the Western classics like Robotron and Smash TV are obvious influences on anything that uses the twin stick arcade style gameplay. But there's also a lot of Eastern influences in the game. So Treasure is one of our most adored companies. And I'm just name-dropping cool games at this point, but that's kind of what it is when you do influences. So I'm not saying our game is as cool as these games. I don't know if any game will ever be as cool as something like Robotron 2084 or Ikaruga. Yeah. But, you know, they're games that inspire you to create your own interesting worlds, interesting places, and interesting gameplay mechanics. So... We really tried to merge the freedom of movement and aiming that came from the Western arcade scene with those games, and then a lot of the more hectic, intense series of gameplay that you got out of the Japanese style of games. So, like the way that a 2D shoot 'em up from Japan will have the screen is pushing, and the enemies are coming in patterns and firing patterns of bullets that you have to deal with, and that's kind of really interesting. Because you can't run and hide or move away from the action. You're kind of forced to interact with everything that's happening.
Right.
So we're really inspired by that. With the battery system in the game, how you have to go out and actively defeat the enemies just to stay alive. And also with the attack patterns you see in the game. You know, all the enemies are firing in patterned styles of bullets and lasers and missiles that create a kind of organic bullet hell.
That's awesome. I was watching the trailer for it, and it's straight up insane what you guys are doing with the amount of like weaponry that your characters will have at their disposal. Can you talk a little bit about like what sort of like guns, lasers, what kind of weaponry that your character, whether it be Cactus or one of the other androids, are going to be able to play as, what you're going to be able to do in this game?
So we start out with four characters when you begin the game because we wanted you to have access to up to four-player co-op. And those four characters kind of cover the staples of the style of weaponry that we think interests people to get a cross-section of gameplay. So you have weapons like a machine gun and flamethrower combination. I guess I should explain every character has two weapons, a primary weapon with unlimited use and a secondary weapon that you use it and then it cools down for about 6-7 seconds and then you switch back to your primary weapon and wait for it to cool down. So Cactus uses the machine gun and flamethrower combination. It gives a really good range on her primary weapon, and then her secondary weapon's got a short range but can kind of melt anything in its path. So you use it like a lance and just run through hordes of enemies, or a big enemy, you can burn them down really quickly. We also have, like I was saying, a cross-section of weapons across the characters. So that's Cactus. Then you've got Holly, who has a seeker weapon. It's a little bit easier to get started on a seeker weapon if you're not so good at aiming in a twin stick game. But her secondary is a cannonball, which is a slow moving single fired object that requires really precise aiming. So it kind of balances out that to get the most out of her, you actually need to be really good at aiming.
Right.
Coral jumps in there with a shotgun, which is one of my favorites. Big spread, short range. Which is actually a little bit faked if you know how real shotguns work. They have great range, but the video game idea of a shotgun is that big, huge spread and tiny range, and it works out really well as a gameplay mechanic.
Nice.
And her secondary is a plasma field that pops down and actually deflects any bullets that come towards it and damages any enemies that are inside of it. So you can use it as a kind of defensive bubble and get all the characters inside there shooting outwards. Lemon uses the classic spread shot, so if you ever played Contra, you'll probably know what that looks like. And her secondary switches over to a rocket launcher with a limited ammunition of rockets that just deal big AoE around where they impact. And those are the starting four, and as you play through the game, every time you beat a boss, so the bosses are kind of these big challenges at the end of each five-level zone, and every time you beat a boss, you unlock a new character. So their weaponry gets a little bit more exotic, because we figured by the time you get to them, you've got a lot more experience, and we can really start to increase complexity and nicheness, I guess, of each weapon type, something that maybe people really hate, but some people will really love. So one of those examples would be Aubergine. She actually uses her primary weapons, not a gun so much as a helper robot. And when you hold down the trigger or using the mouse, you know, click the button, or her helper robot actually spins out away from her like a helicopter and chopping things.
Oh, nice.
And when you release the trigger, she comes back towards you. So you're kind of like moving this object around away from you, controlling its position and your position simultaneously. And her secondary weapon is a black hole generator that creates a black hole at a fixed point away from you, sucks all the enemies towards it, and then you can chop them up with Hilo, her helper robot.
And on top of all of these other weapons, you've also got the mega weapons, which you'll be premiering at PAX Prime, I believe. So can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, those are part of like the EX options in the game. So One thing we really loved about the arcade games and the arcade scene, because this whole game is a big, huge love letter to arcade games in the modern era, basically. And one thing we loved about them is that whenever people did console ports of arcade games, they always came with crazy additional options that broke or enhanced or kind of just really changed up what the core game was in interesting ways. So we've added a bunch of options preemptively now, since we're not doing a real arcade release, called EX Options. And one of those is a mega weapon set. So it replaces all of the secondary weapons of the entire cast with souped-up versions of their primary weapon. So, for example, with Lemon, it replaces the spreadshot, the mega spreadshot that fires a huge number of massive bullets out into the field, basically covering it in this spreadshot across the entire level. And the bullets, when they hit the walls, will actually bounce for a short period so they can ricochet around and destroy things. Holly will fire out a bullet cloud that, instead of immediately seeking when it shoots out, it'll fly up above the gameplay space and then seek out like a giant set of needles into all the enemies around her. So it's kind of like an interesting play up on all the different weapon types, and gives you a new fun way to interact. A lot of the EX options, like that one that really, really changed the gameplay, we do things like disable the online meetup boards while they're enabled. So they're really just for fun, for you to have a really good time and change up how you normally play the game. But they're not necessarily there to offer like that super hyper finely tuned competitive experience.
Nice, nice. So, Assault Android Cactus, you talked about some of its homages, some of the things it's based on, inspired on, but what's going to make this game stand out from other twin-stick shooters? Like, what are you going to be bringing new to the table, to the genre?
Well, I mean, I think the feel of the game is definitely unique, but I guess in terms of bullet point stuff that I would say is immediately apparent, I would watch the trailer, anybody who wants to know. We're doing a lot of interesting stuff with the character design, so we're focused on giving the player a bunch of characters that all have a really unique visual identity, a really unique gameplay identity with their two weapons. A lot of them are types of weapons like Aubergine and Hilo that I've never seen really done in Twin Stick before. And then a lot of unique personality through their speech within the game as well. So they'll have their own unique story that you kind of follow as you go through and fight the bosses. The gameplay, we're really trying to introduce that element of tension that comes from the Japanese style of traditional bullet hell games with the pushing screen by replacing lives with a battery. So you don't actually have a set of lives in the game. You've got an ever-draining battery. It starts with 60 seconds and goes from there. And as it drains down, the only way to get a new battery is actually to go out and hunt the enemies, destroy them, and grab the green orbs that fall out. It might sound like a small thing, but what it actually does is that in a twin stick game, it removes that element where you're trying to find the safe spot and you know, you're trying to run away or hide and find a place where you can easily avoid death. Instead, you're now trying to find the optimal point of destroying as many robots as you can at once. And it just really makes the whole thing much more intense, much more exciting to play. We also tried to do a lot of, I think that this is unique. I don't know if I've seen too many games do this, but we do a lot of dynamic level elements. So we have things like the level Influx that completely rebuilds itself into different layouts and patterns as you fight through, just reconfiguring every single panel and block within the entire level to create unique gameplay experience. Wow. 5 or 6 times over. So there's a lot of stuff like that where, you know, bits of the level will fall away, get replaced, or kind of like you know, different hazards will turn on, flamethrowers and floors that ignite, all kinds of stuff that we think is interesting from different places across the arcade genre, but never been done in one game that mixes it up together and focuses into that really hyper intense gameplay.
So I take it this is going to be the type of game where you're going to be dying a lot until you get the job done right, correct?
Yeah, you might be dying a lot. I think the bosses are quite challenging. We try to teach you all the skills you need in the regular levels so that when you come across a boss, you feel a little bit capable of dealing with them.
So for our players who can actually right now go and play the early access version of this game, what sort of strategy can you recommend to them while they play Assault Android Cactus?
I think you have to focus while you're playing it. It's actually one of our Achilles heels, is that it's very hard. Like if you're trying to stream it or talk to someone else, there's just too hard. It's something you can't really do. So I would focus entirely while you're playing it. Just give it a little bit of time where it's got your undivided attention. And absolutely try to focus on using your secondary weapon a lot. It's a mistake a lot of people go into, is they think if you have a super weapon or a special weapon, it's something you save for like single scenarios. And, you know, we're not talking about a weapon that has like a ridiculously long cooldown or something that is not intended to be used. We want you to use your weapons in this game. They have like 5 or 6 second cooldown. So you really should be using it as much as you can.
Okay, that is good advice for our listeners. I'm curious, because I mentioned that it's coming out for PS4, Wii U, and the Vita. Would you guys be taking advantage of the dual screen setup when you port it to the Wii U, and maybe even too when you do like the whole PS4 and the remote play aspect of it?
We don't have any plans for like special gameplay usages of the screens. Right now, the idea is to use the second screen as more like a HUD, and additional elements down there. It's a bit, like I said, with the game, it takes your full attention on one screen. It, absolutely all the time. And so there's not really a lot of opportunity to do something where you can flick between two different screens or make use of that. So we're generally focused on useful HUD information that you can see out of the corner of your eye on the lower screen, and then supporting as many controller types as possible. So I look more like I look at games like Mario 3D World, where it supports basically every controller configuration under the sun, and that's the kind of thing we want to do. You know, Wiimote plus Nunchuck, using it as a virtual, like the way that you use a mouse and keyboard on the PC, and then the Pro controllers as well as the gamepad, since it is a co-op game and you only have one gamepad. Well, potentially co-op.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been showing off Assault Android Cactus at various conventions and expos. And what has been the overall feedback been from those who have been able to go hands-on with the game?
Overwhelmingly positive from people who actually play it, which is really, really lovely to say and to think about. It's a hard sell to get anybody to try arcade games and twin stick shooters in general these days, I feel, which is a bit odd, because I think there's still a lot of unexplored space there. But when people actually do play the game, they usually come away really, really positive. We just attended Bit Summit over in Japan, where we won the Best International Game Award.
Yep,
while we were there.
Congratulations for that.
Thank you very much. And that for us is huge, because, you know, I often kind of view the game as like, it's almost like this is a fake Japanese game, you know, like we're not Japanese, we're not from Japan. We're so heavily inspired by a lot of what they do over there. But a lot of me thinks that, you know, if we show our game over there, people would look at it and go, oh, so this is like when we make Binary Domain and the West isn't really into it, you know. But no, they loved it. They thought it was amazing. They thought it was a great amalgamation of what makes Japanese arcade games interesting and what makes Western arcade games interesting. So I was ecstatic with that. And, you know, we're at PAX Prime, but we're there as part of the PAX 10, which is their big showcase of what's meant to be, you know, 10 of the best indie games of the year. So I think the reaction is just really, really positive, which is great.
And it feels like it's been very well warranted. I've seen clips of the game. It looks fantastic. My question is, when the game is released, are there going to be any plans to expand on the world of Assault Android Cactus? Do you have like any other ideas for whether it's like another expansion pack or even a new game featuring these characters somewhere down the line?
So we're not planning to do DLC, because I think that after 2.5 years and a long time on early access now, we kind of feel like what we're going to launch the game with is going to be a very complete feeling version of the game, which means there's not a lot of space for big expansions. And we're not really into the idea of selling you bits and pieces of the game, but we do have a couple of ideas for post-release updates, things that make sense to only do after the game has been out there for a little while. So I don't know if any of these things will come to fruition. We have to see how successful the game is, if we can even actually, you know, keep working on it after it goes out. I'd like to. Things like a Dark World version of the game, so an ultra-hard edition of the campaign that uses all the same levels, but from level 1 onwards, we're using every single enemy type. And there's like 28 enemies in the game, and we only have 3 of them are being used in the first level right now because we introduced them over time. So it'd be really fun to do an ultra-hard version of the campaign that's just maximum difficulty from the get-go. Little things like that would be nice to add in after the game launches. In terms of other games that are going to be, you know, potentially using these characters and worlds, I don't know. I mean, the characters are interesting enough that they can work in a lot of varieties. One of the earliest ideas for Cactus in a game with this character, because Tim designed this character something like 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's had her sitting around as just the visual style and a bit of the personality for a long time, and then we worked it into a game that we thought really matched that that style. But you know, a lot of the ideas he had early on were not twin stick shooters, but great kind of. It was always action games because that's what Cactus is about. She's a action hero, but. Games that were in the side-scrolling genre, you know, more like Mega Man or Journey to Silius kind of things, that kind of great game. So there's a lot of space where she could work, and with the way that the focus on weaponry and action and her kind of over-the-top style, I think she could work almost anywhere.
Nice. So, Sanatana, for our listeners, please pitch to them why they should play Assault Android Cactus.
Ah, this is the worst part of... See, I like the making the games part. Talking about the games part is fun, but trying to sell someone on the game, that bit's a little bit more difficult. You should try Assault Android Cactus because we have a free demo on PC, and it's a really interesting game to me anyway. So Assault Android Cactus is a hyper-intense twin-stick shoot-em-up that merges Eastern and Western philosophies on arcade games into a really kind of over-the-top, colorful explosion of characters, dynamic levels, and giant multi-segmented phase bosses.
That sounds fantastic. Sanatana, thank you so much for joining us here on No Borders, No Race. Assault Android Cactus, now available on Steam Early Access, coming soon to PS4, Wii U, and the PlayStation Vita. Where can our listeners find out more information on both Witchbeam and Assault Android Cactus?
If you just Google any combination of Cactus, Android, or Assault, I'm pretty sure you'll find our website, and that's got all the information you'd want. Obviously, we'll be posting the release date there as soon as we decided. The game is very, very close to finished, I promise. And yeah, check it out on Steam if you're on PC. There is a free demo, like I said, and it's a little bit old now because we haven't been updating the demo while we work on the early access, but it's still representative of what the game's all about. So that's your best bet.
Thank you so much, Sanatana. Best of luck at PAX Prime. I hope it all goes great, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the end result of Assault Android Cactus.
Thank you so much.
All right. Next, we got Waves, who not only just released a new album with The Cloud Nothings called No Life For Me, but will be unleashing another record called V this fall. From 2011's Life Sucks EP, this is I Wanna Be Dave Grohl.
Yeah.
Pimp Sessions with My Foolish Heart, Crazy in Mind, from their sixth album. This October, they will be releasing a live record entitled A Night in the South Blue Mountain, recorded at Blue Note Tokyo during their recent Jazz Unlimited tour. Let me ask you something, listeners. Isn't it the smarter thing in the business world to want to keep your company afloat? Aren't the right decisions the best way to survive and make your customers and fan base happy? I personally believe so. Like in the case of video games, shouldn't you be making right with your franchises? The characters you create should always be showered with love and care. It's what Nintendo has done with Mario, Link, and Samus. What Sony have done with Ratchet and Clank, Nathan Drake, and Sly Cooper. And what Microsoft does with Master Chief, Splosion Man, and Marcus Fenix. That's the right path, isn't it? To make sure that your beloved characters and franchises are treated well so it not only keeps the faith with gamers, but every person at said company satisfied with the product they've unleashed. That's how you're supposed to do it, correct? Well, why the fuck is Konami not doing that? Jesus Christ, I know I've flipped my lid over Konami so many times on this show, but these last few days of reading reports, watching game trailers, and various other things about them is making me sick to my stomach. First, there was the news that Konami fired Hideo Kojima because he lacked the business sense the company needed. I did the air quotes over business sense, but you can't see that because this is an audio show. But you don't hire game developers for business reasons. You hire them for creative means, even if it goes over budget. Because if the game turns out to be awesome, they'll make back 4, maybe 5 times the cost of what it took to make. Not to mention that Kojima won't even see a penny of the sales of Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. So there goes any reason to support the game for the sake of the franchise creator. Then, there was the news of how badly Konami treats their employees. They monitor every move the staff makes, publicly shame those who may come back from a lunch break a minute or two late, and those who the company deems useless are shuffled around and forced into what was translated as punishment jobs. This, in my opinion, is barbaric. I don't know how Japan can let such a company get away with these atrocities. And speaking of atrocities, this leads to the big fuck you Konami pulled. They announced new additions to the Castlevania and Silent Hill series. The problem? They're pachinko machines. Games that have no business being used as casino-based titles. Not to mention, Castlevania is filled with so much fan service that doesn't even belong anywhere near the Castlevania name. Now, don't get me wrong, I like fan servicey titles like Oni-chan Bara and Sanran Kagura and also Honey Pop, but those were made with that edginess in mind. There is no reason for that sort of entertainment to be placed within the Castlevania realm. And Silent Hill? Why is there a pachinko game for you in the first place? Arcade game? Yes, that'd be fine. But you are a straight-up horror title that does more to make players feel despair, not be rewarded with those tiny little marble things those machines pour out. The way things are going, I expect that Konami will either fold within the next few years, or they will become just a shell of their former selves. In fact, I can honestly say that the latter has already happened. I lost all faith in Konami after Silent Hills got canceled, and with these tidbits, any redeeming element they could have has but disappeared. You know, at this rate, Konami could become a weekly topic on the show. Personally, I think it's time we start ignoring them. And hopefully, their so-called castle will sink into the swamplands with the likes of Hudson, Atari, and many other failed publishers now rest. Okay, let's keep our chins up, and hopefully we'll have some much better video games to talk about somewhere down the line. And let us return to this week's playlist. Here's a track from the new album by Miyavi, who was praised by film critics last year for his portrayal of the bird in Angelina Jolie's film Unbroken. From The Others, and accompanied by the Dolphs' Rob Harvey, this is Unite.
Out of the darkness and into the day, put out the fires and stand in our way. So many years we have waited for this. We'll be right back.
from the Black Keys. That was Have Mercy on Me from their Chula Home EP. Dan Auerbach is currently prepping for his other band, The Ark's debut album, Yours Truly, which is set to hit stores this September. Drummer Patrick Carney also recently lent his skills to the Rentals' 2014 album, Lost in Alphaville. And right now, I'm being joined by our old friend who has changed her name once again, Ari Kagami.
Yeah, I'm a chameleon like that.
Yep, of course, from Scarlet Rhapsody. And we're here to talk about, for our final segment, Boston Comic Con, which just happened last weekend, or probably 2 weekends ago, or whenever you're going to hear this episode. It happened sometime at the end of July.
End of July, beginning of August. So I wasn't really planning on going to Boston Comic Con initially.
Right.
I didn't really agree with what they were charging for, because I actually went to Boston Comic Con in 2013, and tickets for a day for a world of about $20.
Right,
Tickets for one day run about for $45. Jared is our copy editor of Scarlet Rhapsody. We were just kind of going through the guest list, like, you know what, there's actually a couple of comic book artists we want to check out, like Joelle Jones, who's done The Lady Killer, and Sarah Richardson, who's actually done some work for IDW's My Little Pony Run, etc., etc. So, there's a couple of artists here that we support and like and would like to just see if we could buy some exclusive prints from, get some autographs from. Okay, yep. Let's check it out. So I had some extra money lying around, just decided to go up and just pay for it one day. For whatever reason, Boston Comic Con doesn't do press badges, but for some reason we saw people
with media badges.
Saw people with media badges. We were at the Scott Snyder panels, like, oh, you guys have people here. There's some people here have press badges. Because I actually decided, like, you know what? You can't get what you don't ask for, so I'm going to email their media department to see if there is a separate press registration. And they pretty much gave us a one-sentence FU.
Yeah, we got the same thing, too, at Boston Bash Brigade a couple years ago when we tried to sign up for press.
Yeah, so like, okay, no biggie. Like, okay, just we could just drop 45 each of us for a day and just check it out. And then we arrive on site at the World Trade Center in the Seaport District. Personally, yeah. I prefer the Hines. I think it's much bigger. And like, you can like actually fit in like over, I don't know, they had like, they reported how many, like over 30,000 people at this event. Anime Boston is about like a little bit under 30,000, and it can still fit in perfectly at the Hines. So they
a lot of space over there at the Hines Convention Center.
Yeah, so they have us like go around the World Trade Center building in the Seaport District. It's not like an easy in through double doors. You don't get a badge; you get a wristband. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, in back of my mind, I was like, you know, thank goodness that I decided not to do unprofessional photo shoots at this con, because the wristband would have gotten in the way. And like, if I wanted to get some nice photos of my Josie from The Lady Killer, like, that would not be good. So, usually if I do like photo shoots, I'll wear a badge, take off my badge, and etc.
Correct.
So they have us like just go around the building. It's so you pick up, you show your ticket that you print out. It's a QR scan type thing. You they give you the wristband, and they have you go around the building. So you pretty much do this 360 around the Seaport building, and they funnel you in through like these loading dock doors into the dealer's hall.
Yep.
And that creates like a bottleneck traffic within that area of the dealer's hall, because you're
forced to like move about through the traffic to get to where you want to go, correct?
Exactly. So you're running into this bottleneck, and like, oh my god, like, you can't really breathe in there. So, and it was Saturday, and Saturday was sold out, so it's like the most crowded of all days. And I'm like, oh my god, like, can I survive just navigating through the dealer's hall? Because there were points where you just felt so sardined in, and in the back of my mind's like, a wise man would have kept this at the Hines. Like, I know the reason why they had to move out of the Hines was because of the
marathon
bombing, and I totally get that. But I'm like, you know, it's 2015. Why can't we go back to Hines?
I don't know either. I don't know if it has to do with them losing the dates after they moved to the Seaport, but they really need to move to the Hines Convention Center, because what you're describing to me is what happened to me last year at Boston Comic Con, being forced to just walk around the dealer's room. And I don't know if I even mentioned this when I did my report on a Boston Comic Con last year. I almost passed out almost over half a dozen times. It's terrible. You can't breathe in there. The confunk is horrible.
Oh, God. It's like the worst confunk I ever lay my nose on. Mm. At least at anime cons, we like to take care of each other, and like even the cons give soap as like it's part of your swag bag. Like, everyone, shower. And I've hardly had any problems with con funk at anime cons because everyone's like, okay, shower, shower, shower. But here it's like, ugh. You just get a whiff of someone like, ugh.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I feel like, if you remember in the original comic of 300, I forget if it was mentioned in the movie, if someone were to trip and fall, if they were in that line, there's a vision of you being trampled by these people, not giving a shit about what's happening.
Yeah, and like for the first part of the day, we just decided to like just go over to like check out the Scott Snyder panel. At least you could sit down there, and you could also check out. We were in the tabletop gaming room for most of the time. But let's talk about programming here. I mean, as much as I enjoyed like the Scott Snyder Q&A, mm-hmm. I want to remind the listeners for a 3-day badge, it's about $100.
Yep.
NA Boston's, if you pre-register now, it's only $55.
Right.
And for $100, I'm looking at the program, they maybe have like maybe 4 panels a day, whereas Anime Boston not only have like almost like 8-9 panels going on per hour. You also have karaoke, you got video games, you got tabletop gaming. I mean, there's a variety of things to do, and you get more.
You got a much nicer organized dealer's room. You've got a much nicer organized artist alley. You've got so much more at Anime Boston.
Like, granted, I have no regrets meeting the artists that I really enjoy and, like, just buying some artwork for our apartment that you can pretty much only get anywhere at any artist alley. And I really like supporting, like, independent artists and the creative people behind comic books and nerd culture. But, I don't know, like...
It's not fun. It's not fun. It doesn't feel like you enjoy yourself at this convention.
And also, another critique I have with the con runners behind Boston Comic Con is... It's just when they really want to like milk out and really promote the hell out of Boston Comic Con. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting to promote your event. Yeah. And they wanted to do like this Fenway Day, this on Boston Comic Con Day at Fenway on day zero. And like, I was quite tempted. I've never been to a Sox game before. And so like, okay, let me like check this out. So they wanted you to pay $50 for a ticket. I don't know how much of Sox tickets usually run for.
They're a little bit pricier than that.
However, a bar that Jared and I usually go to, they're having a Sox night out meetup sometime towards the end of the month, and tickets for that are $15. I'm originally from LA. I've paid between, I want to say, $20 to $30, $30 for bleacher seats at Dodger games. I'm not quite sure what it's like at Fenway versus LA. LA is obviously a bigger stadium because we're in a fucking ravine.
Right.
We're in a big fucking ravine, whereas Fenway is like, oh, it's down that way. I'm still getting used to the notion of smaller baseball stadiums because I grew up with Angel Stadium, which is pretty much like the size of Disneyland. But at the same time, it's like, okay, so they're really trying to like just milk people to like spend money for Boston Comic Con. And I'm like, I remember when it cost $23 for one day, and I felt it was worth like, okay, $20. That's no big deal. Check it out for a day. Just kind of go through the dealer's hall. And you can do pretty much everything before, like, 6 o'clock in the evening and be done. Like, Jared and I were pretty much done. We left the con, got in the Silver Line around 5:30, and had a nice homemade meal at home. Whereas at Anime Boston, if you pre-register now for $55, like, you are there the whole day. Like,
there's so much to do. Mm-hmm. Although, let me warn you, because when it comes to food, next year there won't be a food court. I forget if it was you that told me this or someone else told me this, but they're going to be changing the food court at the Prudential Center to.
Yes,
like...
I heard about that. I usually pick up on meals at Trader Joe's. They have the pre-packed salads, and those usually go for $3.99. So that's usually my strategy, is surviving food at Boston Comic Con.
Or do you mean Anime Boston?
Oh, sorry, Anime Boston. My bad.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I know we're jumping around back and forth,
Some of the bars in right at Heinz, they also have happy hour too. So like, I forgot what the name of the bar was. It's like an Irish pub, and Jared and I were able to score some happy hour treats at like
the Poorhouse, right?
Yes.
Because there's the poorhouse and there's McGreevy's.
Yes, I think it was like the poorhouse we went to, or was it Solara or something like that? I remember it was an Irish pub.
Probably the poorhouse, and that's a favorite watering hole of mine.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, if there's an artist or two that you want to check out at Boston Comic Con, just kind of like just get them one-on-one time and just get a couple things signed. Like, you know, it's your money. It's up to you if you want to check them out. But even I have reservations about Rhode Island Comic Con. I'm still going back and forth whether or not it's worth it for us to check it out next year, because I'm still sad about not meeting Michael Biehn.
Yeah.
That made me sad.
I was sad about not being able to meet Michael Jai White last year.
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe we'll do Boston Comic Con next year. I don't know. I felt the same way last year. Well, last year, Boston Comic Con and Otakon were on the same weekend, but if I had a choice, Otakon, hell yeah.
Right. But you see, this is why I didn't go to Boston Comic Con this year, because last year my experience was just so terrible, and it mirrors exactly what you went through. And the thing I don't like is the fact that you're paying $40, $45 a day to just walk around a dealer's room and then be expected to pay another $40, $50, sometimes $100, depending on who the guest is, to meet said guest.
And also to attend their panel, too, because while I do think it's fair, if you do pay for, a guest autograph or a photo op, to get priority seating, it's I kind of want to check out the guest panel, too, but I don't want to pay, extra for an autograph. It's just more for my curiosity and for more of my role as press to just kind of check it out. And, at least with Michael Biehn, I thought, $20 was pretty reasonable getting a nice photo op with him, and with David Yost of the original Power Rangers, the Blue Ranger. Yes, I was able to get a $10 photo op with him, and we did that with my camera, and we were able to take as many photos on my camera, just get a nice, so we know that we can have a nice shot of it. But I don't know if I could justify $100 for Hayley Atwell. I love it. I love Agent Carter. I think it's one of the best shows on TV right now, but I don't think mentally I can justify $100 for a photo op with Hayley Atwell.
No, that's way too much.
I mean, I can justify $40 with Ernie Hudson and the Ecto-1 when I met him at New York Comic Con. I can definitely justify that if I split the $40 with a friend, but I don't know if I could justify $100 on a celebrity. Even I was going back and forth with that in regards to John Barrowman, and I love John Barrowman, but it's just mentally I just can't justify that on top of paying for my admission, because they were also doing some after parties too. I guess they did Ivy Doom Kitty's Boston Harbor Cruise at 9 o'clock in the evening. And, $95 gets you a buffet, a cruise around the Boston Harbor. But Jared and I were joking, it'd be awesome if there's a cosplayer known as the real Peter Griffin. He acts in character like Peter Griffin. What if he hosted a harbor cruise and just acted in character the whole time? And they had,
He could be bye, 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 and he just starts throwing everything off the ship.
I'm trying to think of the Quahog, the local beer brew, craft beer that they have. Pawtucket?
Pawtucket.
Yeah.
Pat.
Yeah. They
Pawtucket
have, like, Pat. Just serve, Pawtuckets, because this was a 21-plus event, so just kind of, just theming around that. And I was also joking around, if you've seen Age of Ultron, there's the scene where the Avengers, in, their civilian forms, they kind of, just get wrecked and, just try to, lift up the hammer, If we had, the Avengers in their civilian forms, just Tony totally getting wrecked and having an Avengers boat cruise, I would totally be up for that. It's kind of like an adult version of a Disney character cafe. I would be up for that.
Yeah, that would be fun. But for me, when it comes to Boston Comic Con, I don't think I could ever return again until they either go to the Heinz or if they even find themselves over at the BCEC. The Seaport is way too small of a place for it to be held, and it makes the experience very less joyful when you're just forced to just move about with the crowd, almost like a zombie, and it's just not fun. Boston Comic Con, it was the least fun convention I have ever attended.
Yeah, I mean, Anytime I go into a con, I always just, I always say the con is what do you make of it, make it a good one. And I think I made the best out of, like, this funky situation. I mean, when it was crowded, I went to the gaming room, and the dealer's room does open up a little bit more, like, after, like, 3, 4 o'clock. But also by that time, a lot of the cell phones are exhausted. Like, so if you wanted to make a credit card purchase, be sure to have cash on hand, because I was kind of kicking myself in the head, like, oh my god, I could go to all the Fearless Vendors comics for $8, but I'm the type of person who carries credit. I don't really carry cash. Like,
yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I really don't know if I'll be going back to Boston Comic Con. Maybe if they have press badges for, like, blogs that actually do give a damn about covering the con rather than, like, poking fun at cosplayers.
AAF.
Yeah, and or rather, like, or if they, it also depends on the dates too, because Otakon takes priority, and I love me some Otakon, but if I were to return to Boston Comic Con, you would just have to have like a list of artists that I give a damn about. I mean, I was lucky to meet Joelle Jones of one of my favorite comics that came out this year, The Lady Killer. And if you haven't heard of it, it's the way I would describe it is Dexter meets Mad Men.
That's how they describe it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, it does sound like a really interesting comic. But this year there was really nothing there that really could entice me to go to Boston Comic Con. I mean, yes, they had Stan Lee, but way too expensive. What?
He goes to almost every event now that he can, like, just travel to. So, I mean, I've already met Stan Lee at Long Beach Comic Con. I was able to snag a couple photos of him, like, during the first Long Beach Comic Con. But, I don't know, it's not a huge big deal to me, seeing Stan Lee or not, if there's a con going on.
So, what sort of advice can we give to our listeners? Should we just say, forget Boston Comic Con and stick with Anime Boston?
You know, if you're really into comics and, like, you only have, like, one Comic Con to do during the year, I would say take the risk. Maybe check it out for a date. Check it out on Sunday. If you're not a huge fan of crowds like I am, like how Evan is, I would say just check it out on a Sunday. Just $5 less, and you probably don't have to deal with much crowding issues. But I would just say, like, if they have like artists that you're really into, I usually don't bother with the celebrities because those are crazy expensive. But if you're like diehard into comics, I highly recommend it. Like, if you're the casual cosplayer, you can skip this one out because there's like it's crazy.
Yeah.
And plus you have to be wearing the wristband around your wrist so that can get on. So if you want to do like really cool photos with the Boston skyline, and I do admit there are some cool places to get some photos at, that wristband is kind of stuck on you until the end of the con.
So what you're trying to say is when the picture's taken, just hide the arm that has said wristband behind your back.
Well, if you can, because when I was cosplaying as Josie from The Lady Killer, I had to be wearing black gloves, and the wristband is like this bright parking cone orange. Mm-hmm. And that kind of got in the way with the aesthetics of the outfit. So it looked like I had like this parking cone colored bracelet, which doesn't really fit into like 1950s housewife aesthetics.
No, it does not.
So, because that's why, like, well, you could have a badge that you can easily take on and off.
Like everybody else does.
Because I also like collecting souvenir badges too at cons that I go to. It's also really hard for me to recommend Rhode Island Comic Con, especially what happened last year. I'm willing to give it another chance, but
same here.
I'll see how I feel. I don't know. I'm just really jaded with like a lot of Comic Cons, because at least I can say with Anime Cons, they seem to have their shit together.
No, they do. They do have their shit together. That's why it's a lot more fun. Not to mention, you don't have to pay an arm and a leg to enjoy yourself over there.
I mean, people were complaining about the Otakon badge prices being $100 for the weekend, but you get a lot for your money. You get concerts. You get to have autographs for free from the guests of honor. AX, that's another story. It's like $350 right now for a VIP pass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But even with Otakon being at $100 for 3 days, like, you get a lot more for your money.
Right, right, absolutely.
Versus Boston Comic Con, where it's 100 for 3 days, and like you're just browsing through dealer's room, and you don't get a lot of programming paneling options, because there's not even a lot of panel rooms at the World Trade Center, whereas...
At Heinz, there's a room, like, there's like 20 rooms on every floor.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's just my initial thoughts on Boston Comic Con. We're still working on getting the written report up. We do have our podcast covering Boston Comic Con on our website, scarletrhapsody.com. You can go ahead and listen to that if you're just kind of curious, just hearing me and Jared just ramble about the con. It's the way we did it. It's like, well, if you've never been to Boston Comic Con, this is what to expect.
Lines, lots of people, con funk, almost passing out a bunch of times, and that's about it.
Indeed.
Right.
At least the game room had water.
Right, that is true. But, Ari, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. You mentioned your website, Scarlet Rhapsody. What other things can our listeners check you out on?
Well, you can follow us on Twitter at Scarlet Rhapsody. You can follow us on YouTube at Rhapsody and Scarlet. We just uploaded some of our Scarlet Rhapsody staff talking about the awesomeness that is JoJo Cookies as we're cosplaying from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, so go ahead and check that out. And you can check us, follow us on Facebook. Just look up Scarlet Rhapsody. We're the only ones there. And you can check us out on the web, scarlet-rhapsody.com.
Awesome. And for our listeners, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and on Anime Amino at kingbabyduckesh. Like us on facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade and on facebook.com/LandOfEsh. For other articles under the gaming and geek realm, go to egmnow.com/Electric Sisterhood. And don't forget about the other shows and sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, Issues Program, and Structure Network. And Ari, thank you again so much for coming on to No Borders, No Race. And for our listeners, just to let you know, Ari, as of this recording, had celebrated her birthday.
Yay, 8/8. Leos are awesome.
Yay. Yes, and it was a lovely time. There was cake, there was pudding, there was tea, and only 12 people died.
Only 12 people died.
So, thank you again. And for our listeners, our last song of the day comes from Toe's new album, which you should all totally get because it's seriously one of this year's best albums. From Hear You, this is My Little Wish. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
And this has been Ari Kagami.
Reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.